from the time that they pronounced me dead was a good 45 minutes.
They cut my clothes and then they paddled my heart, because my heart had stopped. And I could see people screaming and crying, but I didn't realize that was actually my physical body because I was somewhere else.
The only thing that I could feel, if you could imagine, absolute love and peace. There wasn't anything else to be felt.
I was greeted by people I had known in the past.
I'm back home again.
Incredibly safe and felt at home.
Welcome, welcome to Round Trip Death this morning, everybody, and welcome to our special guest, Lisa. Good morning, Lisa.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
You are so welcome, and I know you're a little bit nervous this morning because you have not shared this publicly before, but just picture people in about 100 countries out there listening to you and some watching you on YouTube, and they're all smiling and they're all wishing you well and love is coming your way so that you can relax and be able to share with us. So thanks for being here. Before we jump into it, would you mind telling us a little bit about you?
I am a mom of five, a grandma of three. I enjoy working with my hands and in process of starting my own business, hopefully.
That's exciting.
Yeah. Yeah, I like doing lapidary.
Okay, I'm going to pretend I know what that is, but you better fill in the blanks for me.
Okay, working with stone.
Oh.
I carve stone. I make all kinds of things out of stone.
Well, that's interesting. Okay. With old-fashioned tools or with lasers and stuff?
Oh, I don't use lasers. Lasers make everything look too perfect. I personally like the handmade look because it's all individual. There's no two that are the same. And I can go with the pattern or grain of the stone rather than have it all just come out looking the same.
That is awesome. I'd love to see some of your creative work. But in the meantime, you have a really interesting near-death experience that we're going to be talking about today. Remind me, when did this happen?
This happened in April of 2013.
Tell me what was going on. What led up to this experience?
Okay, so it was April of 2013, and my stepson and I had decided that we wanted to do something special for my husband, who is just a great guy and does a whole lot for us, and we wanted something to do to show our gratitude for him, and we were going to go and get him a new recliner, but he had the pickup truck that we needed to take it home, go pick it up, but my stepson had a sports car, I think it was an Acura or something. So we were going to go switch vehicles with him, and we were sitting at a red light. We were hit from behind. We were hit from behind at 70 miles an hour while we were just doing nothing. We were just sitting there. And what happened is that a driver, it was a big SUV, and my son's car was a lot lower than the SUV was. And the SUV went up and over the top and crushed the passenger side where I was. That's when my near-death experience started. I went from sitting in a car looking over at the parking lot where my husband worked, trying to find his truck, to suddenly being in what I've been told is the void. And that was a little surprising.
I imagine it was. Did you even have any idea that that truck was coming, or was it just
No.
all of a sudden lights out?
It was just all of a sudden lights out. If I would have passed at that moment, I would have died without feeling any pain at all.
Yeah. Okay, before we jump into the void and what else happened to you, give us an idea, just idea, just so we know how bad this was, you said the passenger side was crushed. What kinds of injuries did you sustain?
I had a broken back right at the base of my neck, so it affected my back and neck at T2. I also had brain injuries. Some of the pauses that I have when I talk are because of the brain injury that I had.
All right. Well, then let's jump right into it. So you mentioned something about a void. Did you have any experience feeling like you left your body, or you just sort of blink and woke up and here you were in this void? And if so, tell me what it was like.
Okay. For me, I don't remember anything that was in between me being in the car and being in the void. Just suddenly there I was. And that is a very calming, peaceful place. It's surprising to me. At one point in my life, I worked emergency dispatch. And it was surprising to me when I worked emergency dispatch that so many adults were afraid of the dark. And this was not a place like that. This is not a place to fear. This is a very, oh yeah, it's dark, but it's very peaceful.
Did you feel like you were traveling somewhere, or you were just at a standstill in a dark place?
I felt like I was in a standstill in a dark place. I wish I could remember something before that, but I just don't.
Oh, that's okay. And you mentioned the word peaceful. What else are you feeling at this point?
Calm, healing. I think I was just kind of enjoying it for a minute. That may not make sense to some of the people listening, but it's just so calm and peaceful. You just kind of soak it in and enjoy it. It's healing.
What happened next?
I started thinking about why I had been put there or how I got there. And I was kind of a little concerned about my stepson, wondering what was going on with him. As I was thinking about my stepson, I started traveling out of the void and I went to him.
He's the one that was driving the car?
Yes.
Okay. Was he hurt as well?
Yes, but not as bad. When I saw him, I was, of course, still outside of my body, looking at the situation. And I saw him just sobbing uncontrollably. And he was trapped in his seatbelt in the car. And he was just sobbing, and he was looking over at me. And he was saying, "I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry, Mom. I didn't mean to do this. I honestly don't understand how." Sorry, I'm getting a little emotional here. My eyes are getting a little misty, but it's just kind of an emotional thing seeing your child that you raised. He's my stepson, but I raised him. Then it's emotional thinking about him being that upset. Anyway, I don't know how I was able to do this, but first, or gifted this. I'll use that because I don't know any other way to put it. I was gifted the opportunity to go back in my body long enough to look in his eyes, hold his arm, and say, "It's okay. This was not your fault." And then just suddenly, boom, I'm out again.
Wow. That must have brought him a lot of peace.
I hope so. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. What happened to you next?
Okay. From there, I was kind of teleported a distance away. It was, I would say, maybe a football field away. So I was aware of what was going on behind me, but there was a group of people who were there that I saw. And I've explained this part to other people as being similar to the feeling of walking into a room full of people and your eyes kind of look around. Now, keep in mind, I was still outside, but I was looking around at all the people, and it was the feeling of trying to find the first person who I recognized and felt comfortable with. I'm sure that that's relatable. And so in this case, it was my brother who had passed a few years before. So I went over to him and I asked him about the group of people, about who they were. And he basically said, family. And then there was another person who came and got me and took me for my life review.
Okay. I'm not trying to be like, you know, lawyer putting all the exact timeline together here, but I just want to make sure I'm clear. So had you left the void when you went, you said about a football field away, saw your brother, saw other people?
I was out of the void.
So it was not in a dark place anymore. Do you remember seeing anything else there?
Just the vibrant colors. I saw vibrant colors everywhere. It looked like I was just about a football field away from the car, from the accident. And everything looked more vibrant, more clear. I was still on the planet, I guess. I don't know how to word it. We were still right here.
And somebody took you for a life review. Any idea who that person was, or angel, or?
I have really focused in on it, trying to figure out who that was, and I really don't. This was a man who I felt really comfortable with. I felt like I should know him, but I didn't know who he was. Some people have tried to get me to say that that exact person was Jesus. It wasn't. This was somebody else. I believe I would have known if it was Jesus, and this was not Jesus.
Okay. Well, let's talk about the life review. These fascinate me. Tell me about yours.
Well, I was taken to a place in a forest, in the trees. And for me, I think that makes sense. I very much feel comfortable in the woods, in the forest. I grew up in the woods. When the life review began, it was like spread over a length of trees. And I knew that the trees were there, but I saw my life.
Like on a screen, or just,
yeah.
It was just there, like a screen?
For me, it was kind of like a screen.
Was it chronological, or maybe this event, and then that event, and then that event?
It was chronological.
Okay. Do you want to tell us about some of it?
Well, what I will say is that you're shown, when I had my life review, it was chronological, and I saw my life, not only my experience with the thing, but also I was able to feel and see what my action had on other people. So if I could give an example from when I was three, I saw myself throw sand at my brother, the one who had already passed, and it landed in his eyes, and I saw the pain that he had. I felt the pain that he had. I felt him, the anger towards me, and he, in panic, ran to my mom, and I felt so terrible after having seen that and felt what he went through. I'd even forgotten about it, to be honest, but this is something that I felt him and how, what my action, something just silly like a three-year-old throwing sand.
Yeah. Give us another one.
Something else was when I was in junior high. You know how junior high kids can be kind of not so nice. I saw myself thinking that I was being funny with a friend of mine, and I tripped her in the hall thinking that it was funny, because kids are kind of, a lot of kids just don't have their head screwed on straight yet, and they think that things are a way that they're not. And I saw my friend's anger and humiliation, and I felt it, and I felt so bad. I wish that I could find her now. I don't even know how I would even begin and tell her I'm sorry.
A lot of people that have life reviews, when they're explaining them to me, they bring up negative things that happen like that. Did you also see positive things that you had done and how they affected other people?
Yes. I think that just a comment about how people tend to focus on the bad things because that's what affects us the most. We feel ashamed. And so we think about that and we're always trying to maybe remember that and do better.
Yeah. Well, that's part of the learning process.
It is.
And I believe these NDEs are for us to learn and grow.
I would agree with you 100%. And that's why I'm here today, is because I'm really hoping to help somebody.
So tell me one of the positive ones.
Let's see. Helping my sister's children learn things. You know, helping with their homework. Yeah, she's a lot older than I am, and I would go and help her watch her kids while she went to work sometimes, and I would just hang out there with them, and we'd have a lot of fun, and I'd help them with their homework, and I even went to a parent-teacher conference for my sister once. I mean, I saw the effect of that.
So what happened after the life review? Or was there a culmination to it of some sort?
After the life review, I was not feeling real good about some of my choices for obvious reasons. And I turned and looked at the person who was with me. I didn't have words. Well, first, let me just say that you don't really speak with words like I'm talking to you. You speak more telepathically. It's more of a pure language. There's no room for misunderstanding. Sometimes the emotion here on immortality, you just can't seem to quite find the words. But there, it's pure communication, and the feeling that I had was just a mixture. It was embarrassment and sadness, and yet happiness it was over in a way, and also happiness that I had so many good things too.
Just a quick break to recognize this episode's sponsor, Mochi Health. Mochi is a telehealth provider that takes a holistic approach to weight loss. You'll visit with board-certified doctors, registered dietitians, and get medication delivered right to your door. If you're ready to shed a few pounds this fall, without the embarrassment, without the blame or emotional games, but with a custom medical-based plan working one-on-one with real doctors, give Mochi a try. Click on over to joinmochi.com. That's Mochi spelled M-O-C-H-I. Round Trip Death listeners get $40 off by using code RTD40. It'll be in the show notes. Now, back to our guest.
I wanted to stay. I told this person that I wanted to stay. He said, "You've got to go back." And I says, "But it feels so good here. I don't want to go. I really love the feeling here. I don't want to go back." And he said, "You have to." I said, "Why?"
That's a legitimate question.
It really is. I wanted to know why I had to go back. And he said, "You still have things to do." And I felt inside like a two-year-old throwing a fit. Well, it's like, "No, I don't want to go." And he put his arm around me and he said, "There are so many people out there who don't know that this is real." And he said, there are so many people who don't understand even the basic, most basic feeling of love." And he said, "You need to go back and help as many people as you can to be able to feel love, even if it's a smile, even if it's something small. You need to go back. I couldn't argue with that. I mean, how do you argue something like that when this person tells you that you need to go back for that? Because I did know what love was, and I knew the feeling there. So that's why I came back, is to try to help as many people as I could.
What was it like coming back? Were you just all of a sudden woke up in your body, or was there anything else between this time?
I was put back into my body, and I remember feeling, well, it was very fast movement, and then I was back, and I felt a whole lot of pain and confusion and heaviness. I felt the heaviness of my body. Things are a lot lighter over there.
Yeah.
And so that's what I experienced exactly when I came back.
And did the pain start settling in?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It was intense pain everywhere.
That must have been very, very unpleasant. I'd like to hear a little bit about your physical recovery, but first, is there anything else with your experience that you'd feel comfortable sharing?
I don't know who that man was. Some people have tried to tell me that that was a spirit guide. I don't know. He didn't introduce himself, and I didn't ask. I just felt comfortable with him.
Did you and your brother talk about anything else?
No. I really wish I would have had more time with him. We were very happy to see each other, but it was very fast.
I wonder who some of those other people were at that place. You said you felt like they were relatives.
He told me they were relatives.
Okay. That would be fun if you could, you know, find pictures of great-grandpa Fred and go, oh, yeah, I remember seeing that guy or something. But it sounds like it happened too fast.
It did. I did focus in on one or two of them, but I haven't been able to find any pictures that match them. Maybe because of the ages. There's nobody old there. It's all, everybody's younger.
Well, yeah, and great-grandpa Fred, we tend to have pictures of when he was 80 or 90 years old. So
exactly.
Yeah, it'd be hard to recognize him anyway. So I get it. That is really cool. All right, what was your recovery like? This sounds like rough injuries.
I had to have a C-collar on. C-collar just goes around the neck and keeps everything from moving. It's hard plastic. I was told that I should not lay down flat, so I was sleeping in a recliner for about 6 months. And I had a brain injury. It's left me with a little bit of speech problems.
You're doing great, by the way. Don't worry about that.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. You have no idea how much prayer I did before I went into this.
Well, then you're being very blessed because your speech sounds fine today.
Thank you very much. You're kind. But I had to go to a neuropsychologist. I didn't even know what that was before this, but she helped me to be able to get a lot of my speech so that it was more fluid, a lot better. She helped me be able to know how to get things done, really. She taught me about lists. She says one that a lot of people with brain injuries, they will look at, for example, a sink full of dirty dishes, and they'll think, huh, that those dirty dishes need to be done. But something inside of the person with the brain injury can't quite put it together in their mind how to do all the dishes, even though they've done it 1,000 times before or more. So if you stop when you're feeling overwhelmed like that and make a list, then that will help with that. That's kind of what a neuropsychologist does, is help you figure out how to do things again.
Sounds like I have a brain injury. I do that.
You don't do dishes, do you?
Yes, I do, but I often look at them like that and feel overwhelmed. How's this changed your life?
Well, immediately after, there was a depression that set in. The depression was really, really almost, what's the word I'm looking for? It handicapped me.
Debilitating.
Thank you. That's the word I need. Thank you for helping me with that. So it was very debilitating having this depression. It was hard to get the motivation up to do just about anything. I would go outside and I would in the backyard and I would just sit on a bench in the backyard and just cry, stare off into nothing and pray and beg to be able to be taken back. You know, please, isn't there somebody else? I just want to go back. And I would hate myself because, like I said, I had kids. Two of them were still at home. I had one in high school and one in junior high, and I hated myself for feeling that way because I knew that I would leave them. But I also knew that time is different here than it is there, and that I would see them soon anyway, and they would understand. They would understand when they could feel it. And so I really had a tough time with that. And then my son would come and tell me something fun he did at school and some band thing he was going to be in, and he wanted me there. And I'm like, okay, yeah, I really needed to be there and be there for him for this. Still, even every once in a while now, I'll start thinking about it. I'll have a bad day and I'll think about heaven and I'll wish that I could be there. But it's not as debilitating as it was for me back then. I've been able to work through that over the years.
That's a very common thing for experiencers to have been in a place that wonderful. Of course you miss it. And of course you'll be excited to go back there someday at the right time. Okay, some people feel like their personality changes quite a bit. Now, you had a brain injury too, which can change your personality a little bit. Have you had other people tell you that this is Lisa 2.0?
Maybe 1.5. I feel like that I am a better person now. I've been told that I'm a better person now. I've been told that people can sense more peace in me. I'll go to the grocery store or someplace and people, it's like I have a target on my back or something, and people will want to come up and talk to me, and I'll give them my full attention and I will talk to them, and they can tell me anything, and they do. And they hopefully leave feeling a little bit better.
That's a gift.
That was a gift given to me there. That's part of the Lisa 1.5 or 2.0.
Yeah. Has it affected your personal relationships, either for better or for worse?
For better, definitely.
That's great.
At first, people would come to me and they would tell me how sad they were for me. And I'm like, maybe not at first, but a few months later, after I'd worked through some of the depression and that, people would come to me and they'd say, I'm so sorry that happened to you. You still have that C collar on? Oh man, I'm so sorry. And I would just be like, hey, don't cry for me, because what I got in return is definitely worth it. And what made it worth it is I'm no longer afraid of death. I could die this exact moment and I would be okay with it. And I have a level of peace that I have not maybe ever had.
Before we wrap up, I'm just trying to think of, because what you just said is beautiful, and there is somebody out there listening today that's struggling with whatever, be it depression or just life or a major trial that they're going through, or maybe the loss of a loved one. What else can you say to them from what you learned that might give them some hope?
Just because somebody dies does not mean that they quit thinking about you. They think about you all the time. They check in on you. They are waiting. I think that you couldn't help but to know that it's worse for us here than there, because their time moves so differently than here. Here we're left with loneliness. They have regrets too. If I would have been kept there like I wanted, I would have had regrets. Everybody has regrets on both sides. Maybe they didn't get to say goodbye to you. I wouldn't have had a chance to say goodbye to my kids. That would have played on me a little bit. But it's not the same, though, because of the level of peace and love that's there. And you know that you're going to see them in basically a couple minutes anyway. When you have tasted eternity, it's just so much, your understanding of things is just so much deeper and better than what we have here. When somebody dies, you know, the people who are left behind are the ones who are affected the worst. But just know that you're going to see them in a flash.
Who was the first person that you told this experience to? And how long after the accident was it?
It was my husband.
How did he react?
He didn't know how to react. He was very cautious, very sad because of what had happened. He almost lost me. I still can't talk to him very much about it. But I told him, and I didn't tell him everything real. I don't think I've still told him everything just because of his reactions. When I tell him, he's just sad. I don't want to make him sad.
And this has been over 11 years ago. And I know you've told a handful of other people, but not publicly to this point. How come?
Because not everybody believes you. I have considered it to be a little sacred and not something that I wanted people to make fun of me for, or anybody. I don't think anybody who says this, you know, who says that they've had a near-death experience, I don't think anybody should be discounted immediately because somebody doesn't believe in an afterlife. You know, there's enough people out there who have said that there's an afterlife and who have had experiences. And even though some, they vary a little bit here and there and from country and culture, pretty much every culture believes that there's something there. People have been doing this for a long time and coming back in different cultures and things you can read and study.
Well, Lisa, I really appreciate you being here with us today. Any last thoughts?
Share love. It shouldn't be just me who has that job. Everybody should do that. If you see somebody who needs something, by all means, help them out.
Great message. Thank you again.
Thanks again for listening and sharing this podcast. Don't forget to hit the follow or subscribe button and sign up for our newsletter at roundtripdeath.com. If you want to share your near-death experience, or if you have questions or comments about the show, send an email to eric@roundtripdeath.com. Until then, I wish you everything good that you're looking for in this life and the next.